Hello and welcome to another episode of SAUSD's Amplifying Leadership. I'm Bianca Barkeen, your host, and today we're venturing into the world of storytelling and education with a very special guest. Joining us today is Ernesto Cisneros, a dedicated teacher in our Santa Ana Unified School District and the nationally acclaimed author of A Friend Divided and Falling Short. Ernesto's journey from growing up in Santa Ana to becoming an award-winning author offers a unique perspective on resilience, creativity, and commitment to our community. Let's dive into his story and learn how his experiences shape the lives of his students and readers. Ernesto, welcome to Amplifying Leadership. Let's start at the beginning. Can you share what it was like growing up in Santa Ana and how it influenced your decision to become a teacher?
So growing up, I kind of had the idea that I would like to be a teacher someday, but I always felt that I wanted to go out and do something first and gain some experience and then go back, and because I felt like I didn't have anything to share with the kids. And I thought that if I went out and I did something and became someone, then I can come back and give back to the community. Things just worked out a little strange for me. But it's been a wonderful experience. I remember in second grade, we used to have a year-round school. And during when I was off of school, I didn't really have anything to do because my parents were always at work. And so I remember going over to Miss Suter and just volunteering in her classroom at Fremont Elementary. So I always worked with kids. I remember even my fifth grade teacher, she's her teacher's assistant. She would have me take care of her kids, and she would hire me for that. And so it was just very natural to work with people, and so teaching just felt very natural. But I did go off and I pursued a career in film. The industry just was a little, it wasn't as nice as teaching, let's just put it that way. And so I came back, and I did feel a little sad that I had not gone off and pursued something before going into the classroom. So when students were asking me things about writing, I always felt almost embarrassed. I didn't trust the advice that I was giving them because, well, who am I to give them this advice? And I always just thought, I wish I could have done something so that when the kiddos come to my classroom and, you know, they, like, for example, if I became a published author, they'd be able to see the book behind my desk. And that was pretty much just a dream. I wanted to have that book behind on my shelf so I can go back to the classroom and then teach. And then when they ask you something, it's like, yeah, see, I did this. So maybe, you know, it would validate the advice that I was giving the kiddos.
Thank you so much for sharing. And thank you for your authenticity. I think that's amazing. So Ernesto, in your books, the characters that you develop are incredibly relatable and vivid. Can you share who or what inspired these characters? Do they reflect experiences or people from your own life in Santa Ana?
Yes, they do. So I actually struggled to sell any of my books. I actually wrote many books, and I went about 14 years without being able to sell anything. And the comment that I was receiving more often than not was, we're not connecting with your characters. And so I was thinking, okay, so how do I get people to like the characters and the stories that I'm writing? And so I thought, okay, let me go back to the people who were in my life who meant something to me. And so one of the first people that came to my mind was Efren Nava, who was my best friend from Fremont. We were together from kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade. And we weren't separated until my parents didn't let me stay at Lathrop, just because at the time it was a little bit of a tough school and they were a little worried about me. So they pulled me from there and ended up going to Orlais Bilad instead. But I just remember he was kind of like a brother to me. I mean, I feel devastated every time I talk about him. It really hurts right now because he passed away last year. He died a war hero, a national war hero. And I'm just very glad that he got to see the book and that we got to speak before he did pass. But we had none of that toxic masculinity thing going on when we were kids. And he was kind of like a big brother. He always protected me. And so when I wanted to find a character who was going to be very relatable, he was definitely the first person I thought of. But then I've also gotten over to kiddos in my classroom. I have a sign in my classroom that says, be careful what you say or do, or you could end up in one of my books. And so I'm always paying attention and I'm always listening. And sometimes I'll hear, you know, the kiddo speaking and I'm like, excuse me, What was that you just said? And then they think they're in trouble. I'm like, no, you're not in trouble. I need you to know for my books. And so then they'll share with me. And so they're always keeping me educated. So I've actually incorporated some of my students, parents, people on the bus. Anywhere I go, I literally just find characters everywhere I go. I'm just looking for interesting people. And that's pretty much what I read about.
I love that. Thank you so much. So you've started to talk about it a little bit. I know that writing a book and getting it published is no small feat. Could you walk us through your writing process and how you navigated the publishing world?
Oh, my goodness. That's a very excellent question. So if I'm being completely transparent about the experience, it was really, really difficult. I was not the best student academically. I think that if you were to look at my records in high school, if I had missed 3 more days of school, I think it probably would have been a 50-50 attendance. And it's just because I never saw opportunities for me. I always tell people that I think I grew up with a sense of disentitlement. And so when people would speak to you and say, you could be a doctor, you could be a lawyer, you can go to the university, you can do all these things, I always just thought they were referring to somebody else. I never thought that those things would apply to me because I honestly came from a family of service people. So my mom worked in a factory. My dad cut grass for a living. My uncles were mechanics. Uncles and aunts, they worked in hotels. We were just there to service other people. And so when people mentioned, go to high school, get your grades up, and then you can go to any university that you set your mind to, I didn't think that was something that was possible for me. I thought that someday, my dad used to wear a uniform. It was the blue pants and then the baby blue shirt, and had his name on there, Frank, on the top. I always just saw myself wearing the same uniform someday. So I was not the best student growing up. And honestly, people ask me, like, 14 years, why didn't you give up? I had never tried my best at anything before. And just once, I was kind of curious, okay, what are you capable of? What can you do if you set your mind to it? And so writing became it. And I would wake up early in the morning, and it'd be 5 a.m., and all I'm thinking is, okay, one more hour. I can go back to sleep. I can hit snooze and get one more hour in there. And then I would picture Kobe Bryant and the stories of him playing basketball, practicing at 4 in the morning, 4:30, and then going back at noon and having the practice with the team. And so I was thinking about that Mamba mentality, and I would tell myself, okay, you know what? Why don't you go ahead and tell yourself that you would rather get one more hour of sleep than fulfill your dream? And I always refused. And I said, no, I will not say that. And I would get up and I would write. And then during nutrition, I would write. During lunch, I would write. After school, before I had to pick up my kiddos, I would write a little bit. And then right before bed, I would do the same thing. Okay, do you really want to go to bed now? Or can you spend half an hour or an hour working? And if I was leaning towards going to bed, I would just ask myself the same question. Would you rather go get a little bit more sleep or fulfill your dream? And so that was the mentality that I took with Efren. With all that said, though, I did get pretty sick after I wrote Efren. I was pretty much exhausted, and I've learned to change the way that I write. So nowadays, I write 1 hour a day. And I learned that if you write 1 hour a day, excluding weekends, you actually would write 50,000 words in a year. A novel that's about 50,000 words without all that pressure and without making yourself sick and enjoying the process a lot more. So that's kind of my routine nowadays. And I don't pressure myself. I now understand that part of the writing process is going to the gym, going for a swim, going for a run, going to the grocery store, going to Costco is also part of the writing process because you also need that downtime to process. And you need that, and your brain needs to rest. And so I feel like I'm writing 24/7 all the time now. And I don't apologize for the days that I don't put any words on paper.
Wow, that is truly inspirational. I love the resiliency, your persistence. I love the fact that you have figured it out, right? You figured out what actually works for you. And that was actually part of the next question I was going to ask you. About what challenges did you face while writing these books and how did you overcome them? So if there's anything else that you want to share there, I would love if you would do that. But the other part of the question is tell me about publishing and how did that work? And what advice would you give people?
So one of the things that that sadly made everything more challenging was that every once in a while I would find a publisher who or an editor who would be interested in the work, and they would read the manuscript and they would tell me, you know, we really enjoyed the book. Unfortunately, we already have a Latino at our house. And so there's different ways of finding people who are looking for Latino stories. And sometimes I would find an editor who would put something on social media saying, we're always looking for diverse authors. And so I felt like if I contacted them, I'm like, here I am right here. You said you're looking for a Latino author. I'm right here. And I would submit my work to them. And then you would get that, well, I'm sorry, we already have somebody in the house. And it's a shame because you would never hear that being said to a white person. Oh, I'm sorry, we have a white author already, so we're not going to be able to, you know, represent you. And so that's one of the biggest challenges. And another is that, unfortunately, like right now, we are getting a lot more Latinos being published, but they're not being pushed. And so even though their books are coming out, they're not getting the support that everybody else gets. And so their success is being limited right from the very beginning. And so I think that's something that we need to change too.
Thank you for sharing that. Very important. How do you think literature, particularly books like yours, can impact the mindset and aspirations of young students, especially those facing similar challenges as your characters?
First of all, I know that sometimes most people who are listening to this have heard the whole idea of having books like that are mirror books and window books and sliding door books. But I feel like that's not enough anymore. Like I said earlier, I grew up with a sense of disentitlement. And just seeing yourself reflected back in a book isn't enough, because many times these books are not, they don't portray us in a positive light. And so I feel that having a mirror book isn't enough. We almost need kind of like a glam mirror, you know, the ones with the little lights all the way around. I love that. Because sometimes, I mean, if you look at a mirror that has bad lighting, you're not going to like what you see. And we need books that will actually, you know, put us in very nice light. So we look at ourselves and like, hey, we look pretty good. And that's what I try to write. So I always want to write books that encourage people to be the best versions of themselves. I want to show people how things could be. With my second book, Falling Short, it deals with a little bit about toxic masculinity. It deals with friendship. It deals with issues of self-acceptance. But I always showcase the behavior that I wish I would see in all kids. And part of the reason I wrote that book was because as a teacher, I realized that we are very quick as educators to give accolades to athletes and scholars who have 4.0s. But I've never seen anybody really go out and give accolades to a child who shares their lunch with somebody else or is just a really good friend or very kind and very thoughtful of, you know. And so I think that sometimes we need to highlight those kids. So my second book was my attempt at highlighting those kids. And again, when they see themselves and like, wow, they, you know, they actually do care about each other. They're more like siblings than they are friends. I'm hoping that kids will see that behavior, see it in themselves and be like, okay, I want to be like these characters a little bit more. So that's always the hope.
I love that. Thank you. Now let's move into recognitions. So receiving awards like the Pura Belpre Medal and the SCBWI Crystal Kite Award is no small achievement. Can you tell us about your journey to gaining such prestigious recognition and how it has influenced your work and interaction with students?
So receiving those awards, first of all, they were a gift. However, it's very surreal. I'm a very shy and introverted person. And so the accolades is part of me is not comfortable with them yet. However, what I do like about them is that they're very validating to the experience. So for example, when my parents came here, my mom was only able to attend fourth grade when she was in Mexico. She had to drop out in order to help out her siblings. And she was never given the opportunity to attend school. And I just cannot imagine that her and my father decided to leave the country without having any money, without speaking the language, and really having much of a plan. They just decided we need to change the trajectory of our families. And the only way to do that is to go to the U.S. And so when I did win the Pura Belpre, and I have some video of this that we keep it within the family, though, is when my parents watched me win the award. And I remember my mom turning to my dad. She said, "Ya ves, Pancho, si valió la pena. See, Frank, it was worth it." And that was the beauty of the awards. It's a recognition not for me, but for the sacrifices that they made. That's why every time I have an award, I feel like it's really their award. My mom has five children, and every single one of us, we all have not only a college degree, we all have a master's degree. And the first thing that my mom did when she saw that when we got our first degrees is that she took them from us and she put them up on her wall. And she said, "I worked really hard for those." And all we could do was nod. And we were all, "Yeah, you did. Here you go." So I always tell people that my mom has 5 degrees and 5 master's degrees. And again, it's just very validating. And it's validating for so many different reasons, for all the sacrifices. I've always felt really guilty if I went over to my office to go work, or if I told my wife, "You know what, do you mind if I stay a few hours? I have this chapter that I really want to finish." And I felt like I was taking time away from the family. And so when you win an award, it's kind of like, okay, you know what? That time, it wasn't just a dream. It was something that it was worth the while. So those awards are very meaningful. And plus, they also open a lot of doors. When Efren invited, before it was purchased, there was a publisher, one of the big 5 publishers at the time, who was interested in the book, and they took it to the acquisition board. So what happens is there's an editor who will present to the business committee, and they have to present their plan on how they would market this book and whether they think it would sell or not. And so they brought Efren Divided to the table, and they decided that we don't think we could sell too many copies of Efren. And so they passed. And fast forward a little bit of time now, and I heard from a very good, reliable source that not so long ago, a book went to the same acquisition board, and that now Efren Divided was being used as a comp title to prove that books like this can be successful. And that is so special because it's because of those awards. Those awards do help to bring attention to the books, and many times our books are not being pushed. We're at the very bottom of the totem pole, and when you win an award, all of a sudden people kind of take notice, like, "Ooh, what's that shiny sticker in the front of the cover?" And so it just helps bring a lot more readers. And again, my biggest thing right now is about, okay, I got my foot through the door. Why would I close it for the people behind me? I'm going to open the door as wide as I can. And I want as many people to be in the journey with me. Otherwise, what's the point?
I absolutely love that. I love the fact that every award that you receive, you're thinking about not only folks within your life that sacrifice so much to give you those opportunities, but you're thinking about everybody else who's trying to do something like you and opening those doors for them. I think it's amazing. So Ernesto, as a teacher and an author, how do you integrate your professional experiences into your storytelling? I know you told me a little bit about your students, right? Do your classroom's interactions fuel your writing, and how much do they?
They do, completely. I have a lot of people that ask me, are you going to retire now that you know you're a successful author? And the answer is no. But it's kind of strange because as a teacher, it's very difficult to find the time and the energy to write. But if I left teaching, I wouldn't have any reason to write. So I kind of need the energy of the kiddos. They're the ones that kind of help motivate me and keep me cool and current, although cool and current is probably the best word to be using. But they teach me all the current lingo and everything that's going on. And they talk to me and they tell me, "Oh, these are the new apps." And, "Oh, have you watched this cartoon?" Because everybody's watching this cartoon. So I go home and like, okay, I'm going to tune into this cartoon and learn about this too. So they're keeping me current too. And honestly, they're my best editors as well. So whenever I do have, like right now I'm working on my other book, and I actually printed out some copies of the story and I handed it out to a couple of the kiddos. And I ask them, be as honest as you possibly can. And they are. Kids are incredibly honest. I know people say, "Oh, they're your students. They're going to be nice." No. They are incredibly honest. And I love that about them. And in fact, with Efren, I wrote Efren Divided in 2016. It was during the elections. And that was the fastest book I ever wrote. It took me about 6 months. And at that point, I had actually given up on the industry. I just didn't tell my agent this. We had submitted to everybody, and she called me one night and said, congratulations, we have just run out of anybody. Everybody in the industry, there's nobody else to submit to. You've been rejected by pretty much everybody. There's nobody left. Why don't you go write something else and hone your craft a little bit more? And I said, that's a good idea. So I'm going to write a practice novel. I was watching and listening to all the horrible things that were being said about Latinos during the 2016 elections. And I knew I wanted to write a glam story to kind of help the kids to see themselves in a better light. But I didn't have a topic. One of my students asked if he could speak to me after school, told me that his dad had been taken away by ICE that weekend. I was devastated. I wanted to have a redo because I didn't like the advice I gave him. And I wanted to offer him a friend. And that's where Efren was born. So I started writing that book. And because I had no intention of publishing the book, I was free. I didn't have to worry about the rules, the constructs, what I should do, what I shouldn't do. I was able to incorporate students, teachers, my community, taquerias, people in the who work in the food trucks, Auto Park, everything who that I normally wouldn't have written about because I thought there wasn't a place for them in literature, which I was very wrong about. I wrote about that, and I wrote about it with no apologies. And when I finished, I gave it to my kiddos, and I thought that was it because I used to teach creative writing to the kids, and we would have critique groups. And so we would share each other's work. And I was just thinking, they're going to read the work, and they'll see from my mistakes. My dream was that one day they were going to write a book themselves. Somebody would write a book, and at the end, they were going to put it there, and the back in the acknowledgement section, they would say, dedicated to Mr. Cisneros, who taught me everything he knew about writing. And I thought that was going to be my 15 minutes of fame right there. And something really bizarre happened that day because my kids read it, and they're like, no, this is something special. We've never read a book like this before. And I was thinking, well, yeah, I'm your teacher. You're just being nice. And they're like, no, no, no. And I was thinking about this, like, no, they were seeing themselves. Their neighborhood, they were seeing themselves being valued. And so I remember calling my agent, and I probably shouldn't have done this, but I actually apologized to her because I remember telling her, you asked me to go write another book and to hone my craft and write something that we might be able to sell. And instead, in 2016, I go over there and I write a book about an immigrant family, which is at that point, I thought would be impossible to sell. And so I told my students, I'm like, guys, look what's going on in the world. Do you really think there's a place for a story like this in the world? And they all said yes. So I said, okay, I just to be served as a good example, a good role model, I'm going to send this to my agent. And I never imagined that 2 weeks later, we would receive an email from the vice president of HarperCollins with an offer.
Wow, amazing. I think that there's something that's so compelling about what you said when you said, I felt free. And then I started doing all of these things, incorporating characters, things around the neighborhood, all these other aspects that you may not have included before. And I read the book. It's truly compelling, and it's so authentic, and it's so relatable. I can understand. Do you feel different now as an author, and is it changing the way you write?
Oh, dramatically. Yes, yes, yes. 1,000-fold. Now, every time that I write, I don't worry about the rules. And it's really interesting because before you're published, if you do things that are different, people will criticize and say, oh, that's not the way it's done. But once you're published, it's like, ooh, that's an artistic approach. That's impressive that you're doing it this way. And so now I do feel a lot more free. But I will always, always write with diverse characters. My next novel, and I know it's some people worry about writing books that are going to be sell more copies. I have LGBTQ characters in my books. I have people of different backgrounds, different ages. And I, you know, have an autistic character with my next book. I just try and represent the kids that I teach and the community. And when you go outside, I'm going to see different people of different backgrounds. So why would I erase them when I'm writing about them in a book and about the world? It just doesn't make any sense. And so I don't worry if I do get banned someday. That's okay. I'm writing the books for the kiddos.
And we'll always be reading. So, it's a perfect lead into our next question. With your strong support for ethnic studies and inclusive narratives, how do you see your role as an author and educator in shaping a more inclusive and empathetic school environment?
To answer that question the best I can, I started thinking about my high school teacher, Sharon Saxton, and the difference that she made in my life. And part of that, I'll never forget the day that she brought Elena Maria Viramontes, and she wrote this beautiful book called The Moths. And she brought her to the classroom, and there was a scene where she's giving her abuelita a bath. And it was so tender and beautiful. But aside from that, she was speaking to her in Spanglish. And I had never seen that before. And it was the first time that my ears perked up, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Is this possible? Can this be done? Wait, a person can make a living by writing? It was just that introduction. And again, going back from somebody who grew up with a sense of disentitlement, that was powerful. So to me, in my classroom right now, we're reading Tumble by Celia C. Perez. And it's an amazing, amazing book. And my kids are eating it up. And again, they love hearing people who look like them, who speak like them. And it includes luchadors too. And it's a female character who's actually going to be going into the luchador world. And so it just breaks so many boundaries, and it's so refreshing to see. And I think it's super powerful. And I don't know if I understand the full benefit and the power of just seeing yourself. And I guess it goes beyond just seeing yourself. It's seeing yourself being valued and your experiences being valued. And I think that's what's missing right now.
Hey there, Amplifiers. We had such a wonderful conversation with Ernesto Cisneros that this will be the first of two parts. Join us next week to hear the rest of Ernesto's amazing story. See you then.